Welcome to Talking in Stations. It's great to have you with us today. I'm joined by January Valentine. Elise had to step aside and help out with the Invasion Tournament Series semifinals. So while he's busy casting in the next Discord, we'll be here hosting the show today. Say good morning, January.
Happy time zone, everyone.
Yep, true, true. And now we have three great guests to introduce you this morning. I'm going to let them each introduce themselves in their own voice so you can match voice to name. First one up, DJ Aldar.
Hey, I'm DJ Aldar from MFC from Pandemic Legion, CEO of Collapsed Out.
Seto.
Hi, yes, my name is Seto. Ex-Test FC, currently residing in Wrecking Crew over near Derelict and Domain, currently just playing the game to have fun.
Fantastic. And we have the Warden of the South here with us today. Vili, introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. I'm Vili, Test Fleet Commander, High Commander, leader in certain capacities, Warden of the South, CSM 14 member, and all kinds of other fun stuff. So, how you guys doing?
Very impressive, guys. Thank you for joining us today in the middle of the holiday season and much madness. Thank you very much. So we have been doing a retrospective on the activities of the players in New Eden in 2019. And we've come to part two, the summer months, which included a big campaign in the north. January, tell us a little bit about that. Give us some context.
So when I sat down sometime in November, I wanted to look back throughout the year of 2019 and see exactly how it went down. We got to a few points in the summer where people were like, this, you know, nothing's going on. You know, Eve is stale. Eve is dying. You know, all those memes. And I wanted to see exactly if that was true. So I started there a Google Doc of every mid-scale to large-scale fight or event or something. And I was so surprised about how much actually went on this year. It was incredible how, looking back through the spring and the summer, that those were like little stepping stones to where we are today. And that always fascinates me with Eve. So I decided for December, I was going to put together three shows that kind of looked kind of quickly here and why things were so important, and kind of revisit some very key events that happened in 2019 that I would say is going to be very directly influential for what's happening, going to happen in 2020. So right now, it is somewhere in between April and May. We are looking at the Northern campaign. DJ, let's set up the landscape up to this point. What is going on with the Northern Alliances? And I mean Pandemic Horde, NCDOT, and GOTG.
Currently, like right now, it's just mainly us, PL and NCDOT, deployed
and fighting Guardians of the Galaxy Coalition.
Or some people call them Guardians of the Garbage, whatever people call them. But it's mainly us up here. It's a lot of time zone tanking from both sides. We drop stuff in USTZ. Everything's timed for AUTZ. So.
Oh, no. I mean, let's look about 5 months ago.
Oh, 5 months ago. Yeah. So when Goons came up here about 5 months ago, we sort of knew they were coming in advance. So we started, you know, making preparations, taking down Keepstars, and then Mitanni made his whole big herf that they were going to invade us in a week. So that kind of helped a lot. Then we just decided, I think pretty quickly, that it was just pointless to defend the area, mainly because with Tribute being so close to LoSec, it's just hard. It's not a region really worth living in. That you always have that threat of invasion coming from, you know, Tribute or from the LoSec areas around you.
Because there was kind of some disagreements between the Northern Alliance on exactly, was it either exactly what to do, or, you know, certain individuals were upset at other individuals. it wasn't in this at all.
So I think like GOTG had really left the coalition, like our group, a couple months prior when we, with Horde and part of PL, went up there to, because we kind of went in there and invaded them with Black Legion also. So that we kind of had bad blood from there.
So when the goons came up here, that's when GOTG decided to
go on their side and sort of invade us with them. And Horde was already living in drones, partially. They still lived in Geminate, but they had a lot of ratting space and Cavella Expanse. So it was, there's kind of arguments about how to defend the area, but it was kind of decided pretty quickly that it just wasn't worth defending, since you can't stop somebody from killing a Keepstar if they really want to, if they have that, enough Titans.
Right. I remember that they had several Imperium squids, SIGs, located in Kalevala Expanse, and kind of they were upsetting their renters and dropping on ratters and things like that.
Yeah, that had been going on since Tess deployed to Ojanin at, I think that was like the beginning of the year, end of last year. Billy might remember exactly when that was.
It was just, it started, actually, like we moved in like October, November timeframe into like, as part of our perimeter campaign, as part of a campaign to save GOTG from the Horde and Black Legion campaign in Branch to apply pressure on them that way. And then, you know, it kind of led into the Ojanin deployment.
Goons already had a SIG there deployed right around the same time you guys did. It was all sort of around the same time that, I don't remember the name of the Euro SIG they have, came up there when Kendar was still in Goons, and he,
Euro Goons, right?
Space
Violence.
Yeah, Space Violence, Space Violence.
And it wasn't Goonsworm, it was the Imperium, but yeah.
Yeah. They came up there, and then sort of from when there, it just kind of all snowballed into Goons eventually coming up and invading Tribute and Vale.
We got a little bit of mic problems from January, I think. I'll help a little bit for a section here. So do we know why the Imperium invaded or came up to the area in force instead of just playing through SIGs?
I mean, like, I think it just was that time, you know, like everybody wants a war. Eventually sitting around doing nothing is boring. Like, I don't think there was one particular moment that led to it. It was just kind of a culmination of, you know, years of everything. And then it just kind of came to like the SIGs were doing well. So then the nip ended or whatever. And then it just kind of all, why not kind of moment.
That's what I kind of remember. I remember getting tired of peace, looking around, and that seemed to be the place where we were having the most fun, was those SIGs up there. And they said, okay, well, let's just all go up there.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, PL and NC and, like, Horde in general just always give a really good fight, usually. So I can understand why people would want to come up here and do that.
People got riled up and excited when the Mitanni would present at firesides and talk about, okay, we're going to go to war, get ready. All right, we're getting ready. And then when the first move up came, everyone was surprised at how big it was. Internally, people were surprised. Can we have another FC? Can we have another FC? Let's open another fleet. It got pretty darn big. And that told me that there was a lot of appetite for some wartime action.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you guys moved a lot. Like, once we saw the move, it was kind of like, well, it's not much you can do versus that.
I don't know. Maybe it's better to split them up into smaller moves so it doesn't look as intimidating.
Yeah.
January, your mic's still messed up. Okay, no problem. So then tell us about the first engagements. As the shall we say bad guys from the Imperium started arriving up in the north, where were the first scuffles and what were the first actions?
I think the first like big fight we had was over, I don't remember what iHub it was in, like the O-Y area. It might have been that iHub. We had a small scale fight over that, but I mean the only two real big fights I consider from that were there was a timer, and I think there was, I don't remember if it was a timer or what it was, in 15W that Killa and Headliner formed Munins against, and this went after the Battleship fleet from Goon. And then, of course, the SH-1 iHub timer, which was humongous. And that was a lot of fun to be a part of. But I mean, there was only really two big battles in the war, from my perspective, at least.
It seemed more like a steamroll than a
fight. Yeah, it, definitely.
War of good fights, yeah.
We had the two big battles, and then it was kind of like we had our fun.
Yeah, there was definitely a situation there where you guys really, like, duffed the defense on like the first month or so, and then there was no opportunity for you to really recover.
We didn't really want to stay. Like, that's the thing too. Like I said earlier, like, Tribute's not a great area to live in. Like, you're in direct range of
Lotus. No, you're right. Yeah. It's absolutely terrible in the new mechanics. Like, but that doesn't change the fact that if you guys had wanted to defend, like, in my opinion, like, with the size you are and the resources at your disposal, you should have been able to hold almost for 3-4 months at least.
Oh, yeah. Like, if someone wants to defend with how the Sinojammers are, like, you can do it exceptionally well, like, with how the Sinojammer changes are, with 3 Sinojammers and all of that nonsense. It's, you can defend pretty easily.
Yeah, but I mean, the first, like, what, entire, like, 4 constellations or something, not a single one had a Sinojammer. You just, like...
Yeah.
You guys chose to just, like, yeah, whatever. And then, you know, it came to SH-1, and you hit the first Sinojammer defense, and you won, and then you're like, oh, maybe we should have been doing this all along. And then it was like, but at that point it was too late. There was too many holes in your...
well, I mean, like, when it came to SH-1, it was more to defend it just to, like, get a fight out of it than more than we wanted it. You know, like, we had all decided, like, it was Brother Bob, Iacopo, me, and we all decided, like, let's just defend this one and see how it goes and get a good fight out of it, because we knew it was out of, it was a mid out of range for them to get there. So we had more time to set up to see what they're bringing and how many supers and titans they're going to mid. And it was just a lot harder for them to get to that area than it is some of the other areas in Tribute.
No, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
But the entire invasion at that point had been basically freely given because you had chosen not to really contest with Sinojammers. So at that point it was there wasn't much left, I guess. I don't know how to say it properly.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
From my perspective, that battle of SH-1 was the most fun part of the entire campaign. It was intense and emotional and grinding and okay guys, we're gonna you know, burn to this gate and we're gonna jump through and this is gonna be bloody on the other side. You know, that was Asher leading.
I think it kind of caught you guys off guard. It seemed like, just from like watching how your fleets were moving and everything, it kind of caught you off guard by how much we actually had there and like how ready we were to defend that area and that fight.
I wasn't sitting in command channels. I'm an introvert and I don't like being in those big crowded, the command channels on those Imperium fleets were insanely overcrowded. There'd be 30 people in command trying to not talk over each other. I don't know how they do it. Although they are moving multiple fleets at the same time in the same channels. So there's that. So I don't really know the degree to which people were surprised. But yeah, it was, they knew it was going to be a slog. And, you know, I was part of knitting super caps and grinding my way through and dying. Yeah. Actually, I had one Damnation booster who managed to somehow sneak out and get home alive. Don't know why.
Because Damnation, probably.
Yeah.
It's not like they burn that fast.
Well, it's not like anybody wants to shoot them that much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So then what happened in the next battle, though, after SH-1?
After SH-1, we moved out, I want to say, like, a month after, or, like, right after that. We didn't really fight after that. We started heading, once you guys RF'd, I think, the P3 and Keepstar and killed the iHub, it was kind of like, we have to leave now if we want to be able to get out securely. So we just decided to leave then. That was, P3N was the mid Keepstar to get to Geminit and get to Drone. So once that was hit, we were kind of like, we have to make the decision that we stay here and possibly have the route cut off, or do we just go to P3N and OTAC-Y and keep fighting from there.
Yeah, getting islanded is like a real risk nowadays.
It felt on our side like you guys won a big battle at SH1 and then elected to extract. And I can remember a moment in the next, like a few days later, that we needed Matterall for a meeting related to talking in stations. And he says, I can't, I got to extract my stuff. Like, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty much
how it works. You don't realize how much you have till you need to move it all, I think.
Yeah. It's like, you got to get all those people that, because I mean, we lived in SH1 and MTECO for like a good while. So we had a lot of people there, like in that Keepstar that we had to, you know, wake up and move. Then all those, I mean, you're basically moving an entire coalition out of an area, and that takes a while. It's not an easy task at all.
I had cloaky eyes on the Keepstar and SH1 for weeks, and I remember impressive numbers of jump freighters, you know, coming and going from it and stuff, and caps and supers.
So where did you guys end up moving your staging system to after SH1?
We moved to OTAC-Y, which is in the Vale of the Silent, right on the Geminate border. And then we ended up eventually moving to NSI, which is in Malpace. We stayed in OTAC-Y for a little bit. That was around the time of EVE Vegas, I'm pretty sure. It was one of the EVE meetups. I don't remember which one. I'm not 100% sure. There was something there that we needed to wait there for a little bit. And then we headed out to NSI. Stayed there for foreseeable future.
All right. So that basically brings us up to around July. We're going to revisit the North in a little bit when we talk about Blackout, because Blackout rolls around sometime around July. So let's look down at the South. Vili, what is happening between you and Winter Coalition at this time? We know that Black Legion had moved from their alliance origin. Or, sorry, I got that backwards. Origin moved from their alliance, Black Legion, and they were hired or they had some arrangement with Noros to come and fight for them with Fraternity. How did that change the landscape a bit?
Okay, so you kind of got to give me an idea where you want me to start on this one. So, like, are we starting in May, March, April, June?
Well, up to this point, we know that Origin came down, and we are around April.
So, like, February, March timeframe?
No, we're at the end of April and into May. We're just kind of catching everyone up from where we left off last time.
Okay, so at the end of April, you know, the war's been ongoing for about a month now. We had the initial assault by Pro-God, and then the kind of like stall out under Sinojammer's situation. And, you know, things are just settling into a really terrible rhythm where we're not really kind of doing anything, but we're technically still fully deployed on the border. To kind of match up with what you're thinking?
Right. So Skill Yourself has not disbanded yet, but they will very soon.
All right, so I'll take it from May 2. I have my kind of alliance updates to kind of give me a time frame reference and what's going on, what point. May 2nd, I put out the initial, the first kind of update since I've been back. So I kind of come back to the game like late April, May myself. I've been dealing with some work stuff. And on May the 2nd, I, you know, say, okay, I'm going to take over this war. And, you know, no more Brogad playing around. You know, we're going to take this shit serious at this point. At that time, we also announced AOM is moving into Omist and Kids with Guns is, you know, being put to pasture. And at the same time, the Tranquility Trading Towers agreement deal is settled and announced. So that's May the 2nd.
So AOM. Just to catch everyone up, they are an alliance recently come over from Singular, and they have made some sort of arrangements with you to settle.
Right. So we give AOM.
Army of Mango, AOM.
AOM, yeah, who is formerly PIBC of Singularity, which was at the time.
Serenity, kind
of,
yeah.
Singularity, Serenity, yeah. Was the major alliance of Serenity, and they had controlled, like, I don't know, 3/4 of the map or more with their kind of mega coalition on the Chinese server. And so we had kind of, you know, when the Chinese server was either getting shut down or stuff had been announced, so that everybody was looking to get out of there. So, you know, we saw an opportunity, obviously, as we're facing a Chinese alliance, to, you know, pick up a strong Chinese base group, you know, that we could maybe use against them later or whatever. And, you know, being that one of the really strong things about alliances in this game is if you have the organizational backing, you can develop the military backing later. If you have the organizational structure, you can just fill it out. But it's really hard to develop the organizational structure versus the actual military structure. And they had the organizational structure down and packed arguably better than even we do. You know, they've just got the processes and the bureaucracy so well established that even as they moved over, there was very little lost. So we saw an opportunity to pick up somebody really strong. They had a number of offers from different groups. We had the region of Omist, which was, you know, had kids with guns in it at the time. And, you know, they were becoming increasingly more problematic as time had gone by. So we're like, all right, we'll just give you Omist. And, you know, obviously there's other things within the discussion, but, you know, so they were like, ah, this is probably the best offer we're going to get. And they took it. And, you know, they've been living in Omist ever since, realistically. At that point as well, they were, however, not comfortable shooting other Chinese-based alliances, you know, just due to kind of nationalistic concerns, which, to be honest, was fine with us. We weren't expecting to get, you know, a massive working Chinese military force day one either. So if they didn't want to shoot, you know, their brothers in arms nationalistically, then that was fine with us.
Okay. So what was going on in the war when the first surprise invasion started happening and the NPCs started attacking structures? What was going on in the South War, Billy?
Okay. Well, that skips right two whole months.
Maybe I shouldn't skip that far.
Okay, so I'll just go through my kind of timeline then. So May 2nd, obviously we're still on the TTD deal, the Tranquility Trading Towers deal is signed. So toward this point, we've been effectively defending three or four major fronts at the same time. So we've been defending HiSec, we've been defending Esoteria, we've been defending Catch, and we've been defending in Detroit. So we're like, we really need to like at least cut off one of these fronts. And it's just not sustainable for us to, you know, defend the towers at the same time as we're defending all these other things and fighting this war. And, you know, then Horde, I believe, came to us with a deal and we're like, yeah, this makes sense. And Goons had been involved in the defense quite a bit at the time as well. So, you know, we cut them in as well. And then all of a sudden, you know, the TTT deal was signed and, you know, it's been there ever since. On the 19th, we've got the first real update of the war, which is more just house cleaning again. Still, I've been in charge for 2 weeks at this point, and we're just trying to get things sorted and get ready for actually engaging in this war. We do a lot of fleet cleanup. We announce our first armor subsidy, so we're trying to rebuild a second umbrella in Esoteria because we'd moved our full shield supercap fleet to Detroit. And other highlight of that update was the promotion of Seto to strategic commander in test, which is basically to say, you're a really good key FC. Here's all the keys to all the things. There was a couple other people promoted in that one too, but you know, Seto was obviously the rising star. May 28th. Bless. Say what? Sorry.
I said bless. Thank you.
God bless. Yeah. Yeah. And then in May 28th, or shortly before, we really kind of begin our renewed hostilities, which starts with the coordinated dropping of 80 Astra House Raiders and 8 Fortizars throughout Detroit, and concludes kind of with the Battle of IAS, which is one of the first like grand battles of the summer war starting, in which I think we killed like 300-400 hacks or something like insane. And I mean, obviously we lost 100 or 200, but basically they got trapped with an Eagle fleet on one of the gates in IAS that's not the O3 gate. And we had like three or four different fleets, and Skill U was there and Pan Fam was there, and anyways, they just kind of, they had an Afterburner Eagle fleet, which is highly immobile. And, you know, we just coordinated on that fleet with four or five other fleets, and that fleet died. And I believe Seto was running a Boosh Eagle fleet with DKS at the time, who was kind of keeping Skilyu busy. And it basically became like three or four fleets versus like one or two. And it was a really large, massive battle, and arguably the first like true big battle of that war.
That's a lot of fronts. That's a lot of activity. That's a lot of planning. That's a lot of logistics. That's a lot that happened in a fairly short period of time.
Right. So when May 19th starts, obviously, when I say fleet cleanup and we're prepping and we're establishing the second super capital umbrella in Esoteria, we're trying to clean things up. So we're trying to allow ourselves a proper process to plan the war and establish the war and get ready to actually execute. So, you know, part of the May 19 update is, you know, promoting all those FCs, but that's because you need FCs to run the war. Cleaning up the fleets means, you know, I need our ships to be ready to go, and establishing the second umbrella, the super cap umbrella, so that we can defend Esoteria properly is a really big thing. So we can start having to worry about that a lot less. When we really start this, the process in May 28th, I remember I had gone through the planning process of that, and or making sure every alliance and corporation and group within Legacy was ready to drop. I think it was four Astra Houses. Everybody had assigned four Astra Houses, and there was 20 targets or something like that. And then, you know, it was two forts a day for 4 days. So it was 20 Astras, two forts per day, every day for 4 days was the original attack. And then on one of those first 4 days when they come out, because everything we dropped would take six additional days because of the structured drop timers before it came out. And one of those drops is what started the IAS battle. In IAS is like right on that doorstep of Detroit, and one of the really, really important systems of, you know, it's kind of a really important choke point. And in the end, they did not actually manage to kill those Astra Houses, which was like really important. And one of the Astra Houses that anchored on that day was in fact the little Astra that could, which was the Astra House that ended up getting anchored off of Fraternity's main stage in Keepstar in 03 Tech 4, and which would be a major thorn in their side throughout the entirety of the Summer War.
Is that what we're calling it now, the Summer War? Are we finally getting
I don't know what else to really call it, like the Southern
Fair
War?
Enough.
The Southern Summer War? The Legacy Winter War. The names of wars are written by historians, and we've only got one, and he hasn't wrote this section yet. So, so June 4th comes around. So there's a bunch more of these Fortizar timers. I think all of the Fortizar and Astra timers are now out at this point. We end up losing, I think, three of the eight Fortizars are killed in the anchoring process. Five of them anchor. There's big battles every single day. We actually lose pretty hard one of those battles where we lose, I think, like 30 caps or something like that, just due to communication issues.
Now, if you were going to run this section of the campaign again over next year, and the game has changed, and you can now no longer put a medium upwell structure into someone else's sovereignty if the activity defense modifiers are above X. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was 4.
Yep.
So you wouldn't have been able to put that little Astrahus that could.
The vast majority of the systems were not ADM4. This is like kind of the contested area of Western Detroit. So certainly there was a few of them that would have been 4.5 or 4.5, like that area. But the vast majority of them, including like IES and O3 Tech 4, like a lot of like their staging systems, et cetera, are not at ADM4. So the vast, like, because it's kind of one of the misconceptions I hear constantly talk about that change is that, you know, it's going to stop the ability to do this kind of thing. It's like it can if people are willing to put in the work to maintain those ADMs, but most people don't. Like even if you look in Delve, you can get like Astras and Raider, and Delve is the highest ADM region in the game by far. No one's even close. And you can get, you know, ADM or Astras and Raiders within 3 to 4 jumps of their staging. You can't put it on their staging Keepstar anymore, but you know, there's certainly no lack of low ADM systems in any region in this game.
they were struggling later on in the war to keep systems above ADM like 2.6, because anything below that was actually intossable for us and doable for us to take.
Yeah, and at this point, they still had the bots that were like they had each corp was assigned a system to ADM at this point, and you know it was really rough trying to keep the ADMs low at that point, because the bots were just so thorough in terms of their ability to keep the ADMs up. Because if you just turn on one Vexer bot or VNI bot, and at the time, and then it's, you know, the ADM stays at a pretty constant 4, even if you throw a, you know. Well, yeah, if you throw a cloaking camper there, they would still just, you know, they would turn the safety off on the bot, I assume, and it would just go until somebody came and killed it, and then it'd be back 10 minutes later. You know, at this point, we've had 3 or 4 dread bombs in the war that are still ongoing. We had a couple that would kill a super or a titan or something like that, and a couple of them that just got, like, eaten alive by the Detroit Umbrella. So, you know, things are definitely progressing at this point. You know, we get 5 of those 4 deserts up, 90%+ of the Astra. So the entirety of Western Detroit has Astra House and Raid Crew coverage. So like any system you go to, you can camp, you have a somewhere to dock or just chill at in terms of a safe spot. Then we're into June pretty heavily, and CSM 14 starts. The election process for that, we tell everybody to get out and vote. So we're really, you know, pushing to make sure that we have a voice on the CSM this year. June 10th comes around. Our super subsidy for the Esoteria Umbrella Armor Super Capital Force is done. We pay out way more than we plan to, but that's fine. In the end, we have 250 armor supers that we end up subsidizing, which is painfully expensive, but necessary, obviously. At this point, the little Astra that could is in O3 Tech 4, doing like constant damage and becoming a real, really painful thorn in the side of Fraternity, and they're losing their minds over it at different times. Then June 18th comes around, and we have the big fight of BOZ-1. Well, not BOZ-1 wasn't the fight where the fight was. The fight was over RZ-TAC, Romeo Zulu TAC, where Titan bridges instead of or jumps instead of bridges, and gets caught. I believe, is that right, Seto? You were the one who was in command of that fight.
Yeah.
And he said yes, and then dropped. Okay.
wrong button. Hold on.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it was Dark Overlord and his clumsiness. We formed early in the morning because the timer counted like 1300 or something, and they hadn't pre-pinged for it at all. And I was like, hey, I see an opportunity, I'm going to go for it. So we went for it, and then, let's see, we end up bridging in, and then I think the fire fleet gets there to our staging and asks for a bridge, and I tell Dark to open the bridge to a certain sign of that I had moved ahead. And he goes, oh shit, I jumped. I said, okay, are you tackled right now? And he goes, no. I go like, all right, just warp off to an Athanor. Turns out the Athanor he warped to was still anchoring, so he couldn't tether. And he got tackled there, and then 100 dreads gated from O3 and jumped onto him. They gated from O3 to IS, then jumped on him into RZ. And then I just was like, all right, fuck it, just threw the gauntlet in there and just put everything on grid. And sort of just became, we lost the Titan in the end. He held, I think, for like 2.5 minutes with fax under 100 dreads, which was decent, but not like, it was like the day after the fax changes too, or like a week after them, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so that fight ends up becoming arguably one of the most important fights of the war, honestly, because the Titan jumps in, they, you know, misjumps, they jump this massive dread force to kill him, he dies, but they end up losing 100-120 dreads to kill him, which is not a good trade at all. So it ends up becoming a major capital victory for us. And then on top of that, after the capital victory, while the fight, the cap fight is ongoing, there's this IHUB timer for BOZ-1 system that's ongoing, and we end up winning it. And that represents a really important IHUB victory, because that's the first time we've won at any IHUBs in Detroit, period. So, and the whole time this war has been ongoing at that point, I've been talking about like just taking bricks out of a wall, because the Sino-Jammer wall is effectively, you know, this wall of bricks. And you know, as soon as we have BOZ-1 victory, you know, achieved, we now have a brick out of that wall, which means we have a system that we have taken that they can no longer Sino-Jam, and means we have gained kind of the first little baby steps of mobility in that war. And it would certainly be a good thing. at the same time as this happens, we also, and obviously we have our second wave of structure drops that happens, which is another 20 Aster houses and per day for another 3 or 4 days, another 2 Fortizars a day. So, which is also why, you know, he warped to a anchoring structure and it's only anchoring, right? Because at that point it was just one of those ones where it was on its 6 day anchor timer from one of the mass structure spams. We also have Fraternity see us engaging in this strategy. They begin their counterattack with structures. So I think they dropped 12 or 13 around Amencia. For some reason, they decided to do it in U.S. time zones. So we kill like 4 or 5 of them as they anchor. And then I think we got all but one of them on the final timers. So like their Astra counterattack was terribly executed. And then skill yourself disbands, which means that one of the major players that had been helping Fraternity throughout this time just disappeared into the wind.
Rest in pieces.
Rest in peace, skill yourself. And that only takes us up to late June.
So, and that's about when the blackout started? Was nope. Late June? No. No, it's July.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was July.
So June 24th, there's just continued harassment, more stuff going on. ADM fleets from them, ADM fleets from us. We reinforce BOZ1 over and over and over again. They are attacking it daily. Just a lot of like constant conflict. Not a whole lot of it large, but there is some large fights. Early July starts, and we're swinging towards Wicked Creek and Scalding Pass. You know, Fraternity is really hardcore defending Detroit at that point, so we swing around them as they've kind of castled in Detroit. We kind of begin burning their kind of fertile grounds in Wicked Creek and Scalding Pass to reduce their renter incomes and try and really like force them out of the castle, I guess, a little bit, you could say. We have some really nice victories. We take 4 or 5 I-hubs, and then the Drifter attacks begin. This leads to the creation of Null First and has a variety of impacts throughout the game afterwards.
Let's stop there for a second. DJ, what was happening in your neck of the woods at the time that the Drifters attack?
That was pretty much the end. Like, that was starting to get down to where, like, I think even before the Drifters attacked, like, Goons and Imperium as a whole were unanchoring a lot of structures, so we kind of knew that it was coming to the end. And then the Drifters attacks, and then that's when Goons started heading home. It didn't really affect us too much. Like, I know of a couple PL structures that got RF'd. Like, even like our dudes who like were in bot and stuff like that, who like are our builders and stuff like that. I think one of their Sodios got RF'd. So it didn't really affect us too much because Goons had killed all our stuff, so it was nice.
Okay. I know that from the Imperium perspective, we were surprised, obviously, at the Drifter attacks showing up and hitting our structures. We had a fairly limited number of people who could gun structures and go down there and actually do something to defend them against these Drifters. And those people were running around like headless chickens trying to, and we ended up deciding within a few hours of their arrival to stop the war, pull everyone back home and see what's going on. Because from some perspective, it might have been an overreaction, but in retrospect, I think we would have changed nothing about that. We would have overreacted and come back to protect our assets because we just had too much at risk, and we knew too little about what was going to happen next. So we turned around and huffed it back as fast as we could. All right, Vili, tell us what your reaction was over there.
I mean, to be honest, so when it comes to the Drifters, everybody, like, we were just kind of in a state of like, what the heck is this? It was really awkward. And obviously, as soon as day one, the Drifter attacks begin. Day two, like, Null First is created. All the NullSec entities are coordinating with each other, trying to identify what the hell is going on. Because now we had a situation where there's this external threat to the Null kind of null groups, and so we're coordinating trying to understand the methodology of defending against them. Within a day, somebody identifies that you can basically just use a web and kill them with bombs on the Citadel, so then we have finally a defense mechanism that's established. And then it just becomes a matter of like mass producing bombs for Citadels, making sure every Citadel is a bomb launcher, and just running gunners back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to all these hundreds of Citadels they're attacking constantly every day. The war itself obviously like stalls out to a little bit because we're dealing with this stuff at home for a little. But for the most part, you know, like the war goes on pause and, you know, let's deal with the drifters was the priority at the time.
I remember us sharing best practices widely amongst ourselves and also checking in each day to say, okay, what kind of structures got hit and how many were in the groups that spawned and how frequently are they responding? Are any of yours getting bugged and stuck where they are unable to warp away from, you know, a rock or something? And I remember these discussions.
It was a very good time for a pause in a war to catch up on sleep. I remember that much.
The line members forget sometimes how much effort goes in for the campaign leaders and how little sleep they end up getting.
Yeah, it was just really terrible on like the people who could be allowed to gun the Citadels because they had to be constantly like just, you know, you would respond to one system and another system would be pinged like within minutes, and then you go respond that system, another system would be pinged within minutes, and it's like, holy cow, like, you know, a lot of groups had literally just turned off their notification systems. They were just so completely overwhelmed with like notifications of attacks, and it was unbelievable, like the degree and level and like the tenacity of the drifters. It's like, especially when they started attacking things like jump bridges where they don't have an actual defense and there was no way to stop them really reinforcing it.
My IT guys were pulling their hair out at all the notifications from all the structures being attacked. They hated that. But yeah, the fallout from those attacks was a complete review of the fits on every structure, a complete overhaul to the access lists for who could gun structures, tons and tons of characters training out all of the Citadel defense skills. And, you know, there are now so many people who can gun structures, even keep stars now in our part of the world. So it caused a lot of changes.
Yeah. And like people have talked about the creation of Null First and the effects that that has had throughout the kind of galaxy. And, you know, I can talk a little bit more about that as we continue down kind of the timeline, but there's no doubt in my mind that like the consequences of that, you know, singular event are like will probably be with us forever, I guess.
So then around July 7th or 8th, there's a big tease that a blackout is coming. And then July 15th, boom. NullSec runs out of whatever that that fluid was that Concord was using to fuel the relays, that the humorous lore reaction to the blackout, and the blackout begins. We're going to stop here with our retrospective series and pick this up again next weekend with some special guests. And we're going to talk about the blackout, the Age of Chaos, and the and more.
Bring Blackout back, please.
Bring Blackout back, he says. And then we're going to move now over to our news segment. I hope I'm doing this right. January's mic's not working right now, so I'm on my own. Looking at the schedule again. Okay, can we now, rolling up to today, can we get an update on what's going on in the north, DJ? Can you give us that update?
Yes. He's been deployed here for, I don't remember when their campaign started. It started sort of when we were down south, still living in the south, helping out fraternity. Started going after GOTG. We came back up north. We stayed in kind of stasis for a couple weeks while we had stuff going on. And then we deployed to Venal
to IBE. We've been fighting GOTG since then. We've dropped a bunch of Citadels and GOTG staging online to Fortizar and GOTG staging. We're kind of living out of that now and just small ganging and just going. And then Init deployed up here also about the same time we did. I want to say a week or so after we did. So they haven't really done too much since they've gotten here, though, as they've been really stuck going back to Fountain and their areas with all the harassment NC and we and us have been doing along with Horde on their solve. So that's been pretty good. But yeah, it's just pretty much a time zone war right now. They can't do much to us in our time zones, and we can't do too much to them in their time zones except for the weekends.
All right. And separate from that conflict in the north, there's now peace out in the south. Am I right, Philly?
Say that one again, sorry.
That was the northern conflict. Now, where we used to have a war between Legacy and the Winter in the south, there's currently peace. Am I right?
Well, there's no Winter left in the south. We've taken all their space, and it's just Fire Coalition and all of the old fraternity space who we're currently allied with. So the south is pretty peaceful.
Pretty boring.
That's the goal.
Okay, I hear you. However, there was a little surprise on Reddit this week with a post under your name, Veli. And the first thing I did was poke Ron USMC and I say, is this real? You know? And it took like, you know, hours for him to get back to me. But it sounded like Tez declares war on Guardians of the Galaxy. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, like, I'll say it like this. I double-checked the NDA and all that stuff before I got engaged in this stuff. But basically, so I'll describe the events as other people have described them with what is accurate, etc. As Brisk kind of mentioned on the meta show yesterday, 20 minutes after the meeting we had on Friday, Test declared war on Guardians of the Galaxy. So I was, you know, we had the bi-weekly CSM meeting, whatever. And 20 minutes after, I was still pretty mad. And I was like, I went to Test High Command. I'm like, okay, guys, here's a scoop. We're declaring war on GOTG. And everyone on High Command was like, Sword Dragon? You want to declare war on Sword Dragon? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, you didn't even have to say, you know, for any of these other reasons. You could have just said Sword Dragon. We would all have agreed, Philly. It's all good. So I was like, sure. But I was obviously pretty mad at Sword Dragon for some stuff. And I was like, okay, the only way to get rid of this guy and remove his kind of influence in the game is to remove his voting base and da-da-da. It's obviously less perfect than another way to shape the narrative, I guess you could say, but it is what it is. And like the funny enough thing is like, so Sort went on the meta show yesterday to spit some fire, but he kind of basically admitted exactly why, which is that he's completely resistant to all change because he's worried that the teams that are pushing that change might go away. And it's incredibly frustrating for myself, and I was pretty upset at the time. So now we're in a situation where, you know, I declared war on him, and then he on the meta show yesterday basically threw down the gauntlet and said, he called me a variety of names, he said some really nasty things, and he said how we had no ability to kill him and how he was the greatest time zone tanker in the history of EVE. And, you know, I just kind of smiled after discussing, you know, even on this show, how we went toe-to-toe with the greatest time zone tanking alliance in the game at the time. And Fraternity, let's be clear, is 2 to 3 times stronger than what GOTG is. And we manage that, and I'm pretty sure we can manage GOTG. So we'll see how things go, let's say.
Am I right in that we've never seen a war in New Eden before that had this kind of a casus belli, that interactions with CCP and a CSM?
there's truth to it, but there's also non-truth to it. So the relationships people develop as CSM members have been relevant, let's say, to the way wars have fought or not been fought for a significant amount of time. As you get close to people, it becomes harder to, you know, turn them into your enemies, usually. Like the opposite. Usually, you know, when you know someone personally, like, you know, Olmeca, like, if I was just talking with Olmeca, like, Olmeca is a perfect example. Because talking with Olmeca on a keyboard, I have never, ever wanted to, like, reach my hands through the, like, through the monitor and, like, strangle someone so bad. But, like, you know, you talk to a guy in real life, you're like, yeah, you're a pretty cool dude. Like, it removes a lot of that, like, painfulness because he'll type up these long things and you're like, ah! But, you know, it's kind of the reverse with Sword Dragon. Although I've never actually met him. So I'm still at the phase, I guess, with Sword Dragon where I want to reach it through the monitor. But it's at this point, you know, I just think, you know, it's definitely a new way to begin a war for sure. I don't know necessarily if that was the greatest thing, but it's definitely the way it's going to happen, it seems.
Now, imagine we're 10 years from now and you're lecturing at a war college about this war and you're talking to young war commanders about it. Would you tell them that 20 minutes is not enough time to plan and then announce a war? You'd probably want to put some time into preparing something first.
Yeah. Normally, you know, you would plan these things. You would go into like a cold, you know, evil mode. And I'm like, I will plot your downfall. But I was kind of angry. And I was like, fuck these dudes. Sorry if I can't be swearing, but like, I'm done with this dude. Like, and just, you know, I want it to be clear. Like, we're, you know, the iron was hot, and I don't know. It was definitely not the perfect way to do things.
I think the one benefit you had too with like not planning it is the fact that they're already getting invaded by somebody. So it's kind of like, it's not like they can prepare anything for you since they're already in a war for you coming. I mean,
it's just one of those things where, you know, yeah, it was definitely some heat of the moment stuff, declared war. And, you know, realistically, we had no plan, no real intention to go very ham on it. You know, Progo was like, oh, let's send a SIG up there and let's go have some fun. And, you know, yeah, I'll screw with Star Trek and that'll be awesome. And I was like, sure. And then, you know, he went on the meta show and he like basically like called us to the point where it's basically now going to have to be it's basically like a blood war now. So we'll see how that goes. And we'll kind of go from there.
For our listeners who are not as plugged into NullSec politics, and you're seeing this little relatively short declaration of war of Test versus Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're looking at this, you should know that this is not happening in a vacuum. This is not they're opposite sides of New Eden, and they're not sitting around doing nothing and they decide to go to war. No. One side is already involved in a conflict with several other people and has acquired an ally with the initiative to go and help them in that conflict. So this is, so Test is sort of joining a bigger picture here and causing the rest of the group to all look and go, how is that going to affect us? So that's part of what's going on in New Eden at the moment. Is that fair?
I guess so. I mean, obviously, we're not really like, well, originally the goal was not to really involve ourselves in the war and branch Tenal and just like go mess with Sword Dragon and Declan. But I honestly, like, as I said, we had no real plans here. So we're just kind of playing it by ear at this point, and we're going to figure out what we're going to do over time. It's definitely not one of those things where we're like, we're just going to like now go in on this side of the war and, you know, destroy everyone. It's like, there's already a war going on, and, you know, we made our grudges and our opinions known, and then it's like, oh, maybe we should, but maybe we shouldn't. I don't know. It's definitely a weird diplomatic kind of scenario, But definitely, you know, the lines are drawn now where I guess somebody's got to get blown up. So we'll see.
Within the Imperium, it made a lot of people turn and look at the Mitanni and our chief diplomat, Mirana Bellari, and asked, you know, how does this affect us? And are there some we're going to shoot and some we're not going to shoot? And how's that going to work now? And
I don't think anybody has that answer, man. This is like...
No one does. They all said, yeah, good question. We'll give that some thought. And we'll come back to you. Do what your FC tells you to do.
Yeah, it's a unique situation, to say the least.
Okay, what else do we have on the news here? Okay, Seto, you created a little news this week. Can you tell us about that?
Losing my Titan, or...?
No, sir. You shifted factions, so to speak. You moved house.
It was... Okay, I guess. So... think around like Monday, 6 days ago, I had been thinking about it, and you know, I was at a pretty stale moment in my life. No one knew the GOTG thing was going to happen. I didn't even know it was going to like escalate this quickly, but
it's certainly been quick.
Yeah. But I was at a stale moment personally, and I wanted to try some new stuff. Mark off some new stuff in my checklist, to-do list in EVE. One of them being build a corp of my own at some point. That's my biggest one. And can't really do that in test since they only really take in corps. And, you know, I respect the diplomatic decision on that. I left on good terms. I had nothing bad about it. But I just wanted to play from a different play style in EVE for a while. I want to try new things out. The Southern War had really burned me out for a little bit. And I'd been enjoying a lot more of the smaller stuff, like 50, 60 man fleet fights. A lot of the more, I'd say, smaller fleet fights, I guess is the best way just to say it straight out. And so the big thing was I wanted to find a place where I could do that and a place where I could end up growing my own corp and just play from a different style, because I'd been playing under the test umbrella for about 2.5 years at this point. I had... gone from a small little FC to leading the military after Vili had let me and gave me opportunity to learn in that aspect. And Tess had given me a lot of like ground to grow and gave me the opportunity to grow and do pretty much whatever I wanted. I just wanted to do some new stuff in EVE, you know, so I left on good terms. Tess will always be my home. I'd hope they'd take me back someday if I eventually have a corp. I think they would. But, you know, it's just me wanting to try a new thing. And so I just appreciate Vili and all the High Command guys for giving me a place I call home for the past 2.5 years. Met an insane amount of people. I met a lot of them IRL. But, you know, some things you got to do is move forward in life. So
and who knows? Your marketing advisors helped you pick the name for your corp? Outback Steakhouse of Pancakes.
That actually goes back a while back. So around a year and a half ago, I had needed my corp at the time. I didn't have director roles, but I'd gotten such a high position in the Alliance where I needed to drop structures on my own and do some stuff. And so I went to Dran and I was like, hey, I need to do this, but the corp isn't giving me these roles. And I understand why, because, you know, corp level is different than Alliance level. He's like, just make an alt corp and put it into the test, but make it funny. And so me and him sat back and forth for about an hour and a half. We finally came up with a name. We're like, let's just go with that. You know, that'll work. Because this was primarily, I think the corp joined during the Ojanin deployment. And it was a lot of AU time zone stuff. And I was staying up late. And I was like, you know what? Let's make it an Aussie-related meme. So.
Plus, it's, you know, as a counterpoint to fried chicken and waffles, you've got steak and pancakes.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I'm a big steak guy personally. Like a good medium rare ribeye. Oh my God.
Okay. I heard it. All right. So, and you've put your corporation into what alliance or faction? Purple Helmeted Warriors.
Yeah. Wrecking Crew, the group that lives in Derelict and Domain and hits Pravi.
pretty small group, relatively speaking, way different play style than the test play style. But I think the Corp actually went through on the ESI like 2 days ago. RocketX leads that group. I know DJ and all the PL guys have worked with them before. When the PL and NC came down, I think 2 years ago, to invade Providence during the station switchover to Faction Forts, Wrecking Crew worked with them. So definitely a different play style, definitely different size, and nothing what I'm used to, but it's fun and I've been enjoying it. So.
And is there a fun story you could tell us briefly about the Ragnarok that died nobly in Providence this week?
So that Ragnarok was actually a cash Ragnarok from a test. And when I was moving out, I bought it off them. And so I gave Duran the money. I was like, thank you. You know, I'll see you around. I'll keep in touch. And so I moved everything over. And last night there was a CVA carrier just boating around. And so I had poked like the guys, since I'm not really like much of an FC over in my new home, because one, I'm still trying to get adjusted to it, and two, it's completely different. So I asked one of them, I was like, hey, let's form and kill this carrier or whatever. And they're like, all right, bet. And so like, all right, getting Lokis, and you know, you can log on your nano supers and we'll all just kill it. And I'm like, well, my Titan's here logged off on the fort. I could just warp over and blap it. And I was like, just give me a ping off of it. And he's like, all right, warp to me. So I warped to it, DD'd the thing, and like at 1 second, or like within 1 second before I could warp off, I got bubbled. And I was like, all right, no biggie. And they started logging in the super, or they started logging in like their armor super fleet and like all the facts and stuff, and started getting like smart bombers ready to get rid of the bubbles. And I had been, my aggression timer finally went down. So I started swapping to mid tank. And as we started to feed caps in, trigger happy like Kikimora fleet landed, and then someone said dreads on field as I was switching out to tank, and I was like, all right, I'm just gonna close the window and watch a pretty explosion. That rag had been used in Outer Passage, Ethereum Reach, Deteroid. It was very common to see that rag gating around Deteroid so I could move fleets around during the Southern War. It was bound to die, but it was a very resourceful and very well worth investment to have the hyper rag, especially from an FC perspective. Not just to go around and blap stuff, but to go around and be able to move my 250 man fleet from one spot to another almost instantly.
Is this the first Titan you've ever lost?
No. That was the second. The other one was an Avatar I lost moving back from Oijanin down to Esoteria about a year and a half ago. So this would make number two, just under a different character.
Right. But, yeah, you know, in my experience, the first Titan you lose is sticks with you in your memory forever. And the second one less so. Yeah. All right. Okay, great. Anything else on our list here? I do want to say stay tuned after the show, and we're going to put you take everyone over into the Invasion Tournament Series semifinals and finals, where our partner, Elise Randolph, is live casting. Be fun to give them some support. The poor guy's pulling his hair out this morning, but we won't talk about that. Please join us next week for the next phase of our... I did want us to go around the room and say something you might not know about Eve, if we could. So do we have enough time for that, Maestro? I think we could. I think we do. We started a little bit late. Okay, so if you've got a tip or an old story, or something like that, think about that. If anyone has one ready, they can go first, or I'll go. Okay, and this one, actually, I got a little help with this from Lady Scarlet last night at the Eve meet in Los Angeles. We were talking about the Dominion Sovereignty System and Sovereignty Blockade Units that you used to put on the corners of your empire of each system. And we would talk about how the owners of the SOV would go and shoot our own SBUs, Sovereignty Blockade Units, to start a timer and then pull back so that the structures were invulnerable and the timer already started so that hostiles couldn't come in and do something. So if we saw them making a move towards us, we would defensively attack our own structures to start timers. And she said, you know what? That probably still works now if with upwell structures. So if you've set the timing right on your structure, if you're going to go away for the weekend and you just really don't want your Keepstar or your Fortizar attacked, you could probably reinforce it yourself, get it into a favorable timing mechanism, and then come back later and clean it up after you're back home. Then you know that hostiles can't come in and mess with it while you're traveling or enjoying Christmas or something.
We actually did that quite a few times. And in it deployed, we'd shoot our jump bridges. If we knew they were forming up, they couldn't actually RF them. They'd have to wait the full 15 minutes.
Yeah. Nice. Anyone else have anything? All right. Okay, so next week, we have special CCP guests helping us with the next part of the retrospective, which picks up from where the Drifters have invaded and attacked structures, and the blackout has begun. That should be an exciting and fun discussion. Thank you to the folks who invited them and put that all together with us. Much appreciated. It's a lot of work to coordinate these shows in the background.
Is that kind of like a quiet shadow to January Valentine or some other person?
Well, she had help on that. January usually puts together most of the show and invites the guests, like our fantastic guests today. But I think when it's CCP, sometimes they reach out to us or they're talking to Matterall. That happens on multiple levels and is a little bit of an exception to our normal process. January probably knows more, but her mic's probably she's probably planning to carve her mic up into little pieces now. Oh, she's saying we have CCP Convict, CCP Dopamine, and CCP Spider next week, which is an exceptionally fun panel right there.
Yeah, that's a really good crew of good guys.
Yeah. Bring a glass of champagne and come to the show next week. That'll be a lot of fun. And it's her local internet, not the microphone that's got her pulling her hair out. Okay, thank you for joining us today. Reminder, you can see these videos on demand on our YouTube channel, on talkinginstations.com. You can download the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Fly safe, everyone.